Act 6. 144. Exterior. The town, a high angle, late afternoon. This is the same shot we went out on, but it's later now. There isn't much daylight left. The wind shrieks. 145. Exterior. The wooded area south of town, late afternoon. We're looking down at the surging ocean through a power line cut. There's a cracking sound, and a huge old pine topples on the lines. They go down in a shower of sparks. 146. Exterior. Main Street. Late afternoon. In a reprise of the first scene, all the lights, including the blinker at the intersection, go out. 147. Interior. The constable's office with Hatch and Peter. The lights go out. Hatch. Aw, damn. Peter makes no response. He's looking at... 148. Interior. The jail cell from Peter's point of view. Linoge is just a dark hump, except for his eyes. They glow with a troubled red light, like wolf's eyes. 149. Interior. Resume Hatch and Peter. Hatch is rummaging in the desk drawer. As he pulls out a flashlight, Peter seizes his arm. Peter Godso. Look at him. Hatch, startled, wheels to look at Linoge. The prisoner is still sitting just as before, but there's no weird light shining out of his eyes. Hatch turns on the flashlight and hits Linoge in the face with the beam. Linoge looks back, calmly. Hatch, to Peter. What? Peter Godso. Nothing. He looks back toward Linoge, perplexed and a little afraid. Hatch. Maybe you've been smoking too much of what you're selling. Peter Godso, mixed shame and anger. Shut up, Hatch. Don't talk about what you don't understand. 150. Interior, the market's counter, with Mike and Tess Marchand. Looks like they're the only two left now, and with the lights out, the market is very dim. The front windows are big, but the light coming through them has started to fail. Mike comes behind the counter and opens a utility box built into the wall. Inside are circuit breakers and one larger switch. He flicks this one. 151. Exterior, behind the market, late day. There is a little shed marked generator to the left of the loading dock. An engine starts up inside it, and blue smoke, immediately ripped away by the wind, starts to chug from the exhaust stack. 152. Interior. The constable's office. The lights come back on. Hatch sighs with relief. Hatch. Hey, Pete! He wants to apologize, and he wants Peter to help him with it a little, but Peter's not in the mood. He walks away and looks at the bulletin board on the wall. Hatch. I was out of line. Peter. Yeah, way out. Peter turns and gives Linoge a look. Linoge looks back at him, smiling faintly. Peter, what are you looking at? Linoge doesn't reply, just goes on looking at Peter with that faint smile. Peter turns back to the bulletin board troubled. Hatch looks at Peter, wishing he could take back his smart-ass comment. 153. Exterior. The store's porch with Mike and Tess. Tess is wearing a parka, gloves, and a pair of high gum rubber boots. Still, the wind rocks her on her feet, and Mike has to steady her before going to the display window on one side of the door. Here on either side of the window at the bottom, there are crank handles. Mike grabs one, and Tess makes her way to the other. They crank as they talk, shouting to be heard over the wind, and lower the slatted wooden storm shutter over the glass. Mike, will you be all right? Because I can give you a lift. Tess. It's the wrong direction, and I'm only six houses down, as you well know. Don't baby me. He nods and gives her a smile. They move to the window on the other side of the door and lower the other storm shutter. Tess.
Mike, do you have any idea why he came here, or why he'd want to kill Martha?
Mike. No. Go on home, Tess. Make yourself a fire. I'll lock up. They finish with the shutter and move to the steps. Tess winces and tightens her hood as another gust slams into them. Tess,
you mind him careful. We don't want him out and prowling around with this.
Lifts her chin into the blizzard.
Going on.
Mike, don't worry. She looks at him a moment longer and is reasonably comforted by what she sees. She nods and clumps down the snow-laden steps, holding tight to the railing as she goes. With her back to him, Mike allows his face to show how worried he really is. Then he heads back inside and shuts the door. He turns the open sign to closed and pulls down the shade. 154. Interior. The constable's office. Mike comes in, still stamping the snow off his boots, and looks around. Hatch has found a second flashlight and has set out some candles as well. Peter is still studying the litter of notices on the bulletin board. Mike goes over to the bulletin board, taking a paper from his back pocket. Mike, everything okay back here? Hatch,
reasonably okay, but I can't raise the state police in Machias.
I can't raise anybody. Mike,
doesn't really surprise me.
He thumbtacks the scribbled duty roster to the bulletin board, where Peter immediately begins studying it. Mike walks over to the desk and opens a bottom drawer. Mike, to Hatch.
You and Peter until 8. Kirk Freeman and Jack Carver from 8 till midnight. Robbie Beals and Sonny Brodigan from midnight until 4. Billy Soames and Johnny Hireman from 4 until 8 tomorrow morning. After that, we'll figure some more.
Mike finds a small attaché case and a Polaroid camera. He takes them, shuts the drawer, and looks at the two men for comments. He gets only an awkward silence. Mike, you guys all right with this?
Hatch,
too hardy.
Fine.
Peter,
yeah, fine.
Mike looks at them more closely and gets an idea of which way the wind is blowing. He opens the case. We catch a glimpse of various items that might come in handy if you're a small-town police officer. Big flashlight, bandages, first aid kit, etc. He puts the Polaroid inside. Mike,
stay alert, both of you. Understand?
No reply. Hatch is embarrassed. Peter is sulky. Mike looks back at Linoge, who looks at him with that faint smile. Mike,
later on, we're going to have that talk you wanted, sir.
He closes the case and starts for the door. A huge gust of wind hits the building, making it creak. Out back, something falls over with a crash. Hatch winces.
Hatch, what do we do with him if Robbie and Ursula decide to blow the town whistle and bring everybody in?
We can't very well fit him in a corner of the town hall basement with a blanket and a cup of chowder.
Mike, I don't know. Stay right here with him, I guess.
Peter,
and blow away if he blows away?
Mike, you want to go home, Pete?
Peter,
no.
Mike nods and leaves. 155. Exterior. Martha Clarendon's house. Dusk. The Island Services vehicle comes out of the growing gloom, crunching through drifts and driving over fallen limbs in the street. It stops by Martha's gate. Mike gets out, carrying the little case, and goes up the walk. The storm is worse than ever. The gusts of wind push Mike around. He struggles up the snow-laden porch steps. 156. Exterior. The porch, with Mike. Dusk. He opens his case, takes out the flashlight and the cased Polaroid. He hangs the camera around his neck on its strap. The wind moans. Branches clack against the porch. Mike looks around, a little nervous, then returns his attention to the case. He takes out a roll of white adhesive tape and a Sharpie-type pen. Holding the flashlight, now turned on, between his chest and his arm, Mike tears off a strip of the tape and puts it on Martha's door. He uncaps the pen, thinks, then prints, "Crime scene. Do not enter. Michael Anderson, constable." Then he puts the roll of tape on his arm like a bracelet and opens the door. He picks up Martha's walker, holding the grips in his gloved hands, and sets it in the hall. Then he closes his case, picks it up, and steps inside himself. 157. Interior. The hallway. dark. Mike puts his flashlight turned on in his coat pocket. The beam shines upward at the ceiling. Mike himself is little more than a moving shape in the dark as he readies the Polaroid and raises it to his face. Flash. And we see... 158. Interior, Martha Clarendon. Her battered, bloody face, just for a moment. Then it fades. This picture and those that follow have the stark quality of crime scene photos, of evidence, which is just what they will be in a courtroom someday, or so Mike hopes. 159. Interior, the hallway. Dark. Mike turns, putting the first photo in his coat pocket, then triggers the Polaroid again. Flash, and we see... 160. Interior. Pictures on the hallway wall. Boats at sea. The town dock in 1920. Old Fords chugging up Atlantic Street Hill in 1928. Girls having a picnic by the lighthouse. The pictures are stippled with blood. Between them on the wallpaper are thicker sprays of blood. Fades. 161. Interior. The hallway. Dark. The shape that is Mike Anderson bends a little. Flash. And we see... 163. Interior. The hallway. Dark. Mike moves up the hall toward the living room. 164. Interior. The living room. Dark. It's pretty spooky in here, with the furniture just dim shapes and the wind howling outside. Branches tap and trees groan. Mike moves forward, the flashlight beam still spraying up from his coat pocket. He inadvertently kicks something. A dark shape rolls across the floor, hits a leg of Martha's chair, and ricochets out of frame. Mike follows after, takes the flashlight out of his pocket, and shines it into the lens of the camera. He's looking at the object he kicked, although we can't see it from where we are. He replaces the flashlight in his pocket, raises the Polaroid, and bends forward. Flash, and 165. Interior, Davy's basketball. Splotched and stained with blood. Looks like some weird planet. Fades. 166. Interior, the living room, with Mike. Dark. He rips off a piece of the tape, prints evidence on it, and sticks it to the basketball. Then he walks around the chair and aims the Polaroid at the TV. Flash, and 167. Interior, the television. The picture tube totally smashed, the electronic guts of the thing visible inside the ragged hole. It's like a gouged-out eye. Fades. 168. Interior, the living room, with Mike. Dark. He's frowning, puzzled, thinking about the TV. He and Hatch heard the damned thing. They really did. He moves carefully toward it, then turns and raises the Polaroid. Flash, and 169. Interior, Martha's chair. Stark and blood-stained, as creepy as an instrument of torture. The cookie plate and blood-stained teacup are still on the table beside it. 170. Interior. Resume, Mike. He wants a second one of this. He raises the Polaroid, then stops. He looks up at 171. Interior. Above the door between the living room and the hall. There's something up there, written on the wallpaper above the arch. We can see it, but it's too dark to read. 172. Interior. Resume. Mike. He points the Polaroid up, aims, and flash. 173. Interior. Above the door between the living room and the hall. It's a message, printed in Martha Clarendon's blood. Give me what I want, and I'll go away. Above it is a drawing. Reader's note. It is the drawing of a cane. End of note. We may or may not recognize it. Fades. 174. Interior. Resume, Mike. He's shaken, and badly. Still, he's determined to do his job. He raises the Polaroid for that second shot of the chair. Flash. 175. Interior, Martha's chair. This time, Linoja's cane lies across the arms of the chair, the blood-stained wolf's head snarling into the flash. If we didn't understand the significance of the drawing on the wall, we do now. 176. Interior. Resume, Mike. The camera drops out of his hands. If not for the strap, it would fall to the floor. He is understandably freaked. The cane wasn't there before. The wind gusts, the strongest one yet. Behind Mike, the window facing the street explodes inward. Snow swirls into the room, twisting in ghostly cyclones. The shears billow like ghostly arms. Mike is startled. Hopefully we will be too, but recovers quickly. He pulls the drapes across the broken window. They billow out, but he quickly moves a table into place to anchor them. Then he turns back to Martha's chair and that unexpected cane. He bends over it, then raises the Polaroid. Flash, and... 177. Interior, the wolf's head cane, close-up. It stares at us with its bloody teeth and eyes like a ghost wolf in a stroke of lightning, then fades. 178. Interior, resume, Mike. He remains where he is for a moment, trying to get himself back together. Then he pockets the last picture, tears off another strip of white tape, and tags the cane. On it he prints evidence and possible murder weapon. 179. Interior. Martha's dining room. Dark. Mike comes in, removes the pine cone and candle centerpiece from the table, then removes the white linen tablecloth. 180. Interior. The hall, with Mike. He comes out of the dining room and approaches the shape of Martha's body. As he does, he notices something on the wall by the door. He trains the beam of his flashlight on it. It is a key rack, in the shape of a key. Mike runs the light along it and finds the set of keys he's looking for. He takes them off their peg. 181. Interior. The keys on Mike's palm. Insert. The tag on one reads front door in Martha's spidery old lady's writing. 182. Interior. Resume hall with Mike. He pockets the keys and sets his case and camera aside on the stairs for the moment. Mike. I'm so sorry, old girl. He billows the tablecloth over Martha, then takes up his gear again. He opens the door to the porch just enough to slip through and goes out into the shrieking storm. Night has fallen. 183. Exterior. On the porch with Mike. Night. He uses Martha's key to lock the door. Tries it to make sure it's locked. Then he goes down the steps and begins floundering back down the walk to the Island Services vehicle. 184. Exterior, a house on Upper Main Street. Night. We can barely see it through the sheeting snow. 185. Interior, the Carver kitchen, with Jack, Angela, and Buster. No generator here. The kitchen is lit with two Coleman gas lanterns, and there are big shadows in all the corners. The little family is eating cold cuts and drinking soda. Each time the wind gusts and the house creaks, Angela looks around nervously. Jack is a lobsterman and less worried about weather. What's to worry when you're on dry land, for gory's sake? He's playing airplane with Buster. The plane is a bologna sandwich. Buster's open mouth is the hangar. Jack keeps approaching, making the appropriate airplane noises as he does, then pulling away. Buster is laughing heartily. Daddy is such a comedian. There's a rending, splintering crash from outside. Angela grabs Jack's arm. Angela.
What was that?
Jack Carver. Tree. Robichaud's backyard from the sound. Hope it didn't hit the porch. He starts playing airplane again, this time landing the sandwich in Buster's mouth. Buster chomps off a bite and chews with gusto. Angela.
Jack, do you have to go back to the store?
Jack. Yeah?
Buster. Daddy's gonna guard the bad guy. Make sure he doesn't get away. In a plane.
Jack. That's right, big guy. Jack dive bombs another bite into Buster's mouth and ruffles his hair, then looks seriously at Angela. Jack. This is a bad situation, honey. Everybody's got to do his part. Besides, I'll be with Kirk. It's the buddy system.
Buster. Don Beals is my buddy. He knows how to be a monkey.
Jack. Yeah, trick he learned from his dad, most likely. Angie laughs and covers her mouth. Jack smiles at her. Buster starts making monkey sounds and scratching at his tits. Typical 5-year-old dinner behavior. The parents treat him with absent-minded love.
Jack, if you hear the whistle, take Buster and go. Hell, go before then if you get nervous. Bundle up and take the snowmobile.
Angela, are you sure?
Jack, yeah. Fact is, the earlier you go, the better bed you and Buster are apt to have. People headed that way already. I seen the lights.
Lifts his chin toward the window.
You'll be here or there when my watch is over. Don't matter. I'll find you.
He smiles at her. She smiles back, reassured. The wind screams. They listen, smiles fading. Faint, we hear the sound of pounding waves.
Jack. Town hall basement's probably going to be the safest place on the island for the next 48 hours. There's going to be one hell of a storm surge tonight, tell you that.
Angela.
Why did that man have to come today of all days?
Buster.
What did the bad man do, Mommy?
Here we are again. Little pitchers and their big ears. Angela leans over and kisses him. Angela.
Stole the moon and brought the wind. How about another sandwich, big boy?
Buster.
Yeah, and Daddy can fly it.
186. Exterior. Godso, fish and lobster. Dark. The waves are crashing higher than ever. 187. Exterior. The lighthouse. Dark. Now just a vague shape in the storm, illuminating a wilderness of snow each time the light comes around. 188. Exterior. Main and Atlantic intersection. Dark. The wind tears the darkened blinker loose, and it goes flying to the end of its cord like a yo-yo to the end of its string, before finally thumping down into the snowy street. 189. Interior. The constable's office jail cell with Manoj. Dark. Manoj is sitting as before, with his feet up and his hungry face framed by his slightly spread knees. He's intent, focused, still wearing the shadow of a smile. 190. Interior. Angle on the constable's office with Hatch and Peter. Hatch has got a power book open. Its glow shines on his rapt face. He's running a crossword puzzle program and is deep into it. He doesn't notice Peter, who is sitting below the bulletin board and staring back at Linoge, black-faced and wide-eyed. Peter is hypnotized. 191. Interior. Manoge. Close-up. His smile widens. His eyes darken to black, and that red starts to roll into them again. 192. Interior. Resume Hatch and Peter. Without removing his gaze from Linoge's, Peter reaches behind him and pulls an old Department of Fisheries red-tied notice from the board. He turns it over. He has a ballpoint in his flap pocket. He now clicks the tip and puts pen to paper. He never looks down at what he's doing, though. His gaze never leaves Linoge.
Hatch, not looking up. Say, Pete, what do you suppose this one is? Yodeler's perch? Three letters.
193. Interior. Linoge. Close up. Smiling, he mouths a word that looks like a gulp. 194. Interior. Resume Hatch and Peter.
Peter.
Alp.
Hatch.
Cost it is.
Types it into the grid. This is a great program. I'll let you try later if you want.
Peter.
Sure. He sounds okay, but never takes his eyes from Linoge. His pen never stops moving either. Never even slows. 195. Interior. The back of the fisheries flyer. Written there over and over again in jagged capital letters is this. Give me, give me, give me, give me what I want. Give me what I want. Give me what I want. Drawn around the words, like bizarre illuminations on a monk's manuscript, is the same shape we saw over Martha's living room door. Canes. 196. Interior, Linoge, close up.
Grinning. Black, beast-like eyes, full of roiling red. We can just see the tips of his fang-like teeth.
197. Exterior, the woods on the little tall headland. Night. The wind shrieks. The trees bend in the blizzard, their branches clattering. 198. Exterior, little tall, a high shot. Night. The buildings are already snow-covered. The two streets are snow-choked. There are only a few lights. This is a town cut off from the entire outside world. We hold on this, then fade to black. This ends Act 6.